place, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my moment, it's built to last. Keep the focus.
Welcome everyone to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We're so happy you're here. We have a wonderful guest today. Welcome to the show, Kevin McLemore.
All right. How you doing, Miss Becca? How are you doing?
I am doing great. I had such a great time on your podcast talking with Kevin and Son that I had to continue the conversation and have you on my podcast. So I'm really excited to share you with my audience. Let me tell them a little bit about your background. So Kevin McLemore is vice president and co-founder of RMK Productions and the 10 United Podcast Network. He creates avenues where human perspectives can be shared on all media platforms. He is a proud father and husband, a master storyteller, and a speaker, and he teaches all about choices that can change your life. He went from being illiterate in college to being a multiple best-selling author, and he is a songwriter and the host of the Talking with Kevin and Son podcast. So, Kevin, tell us your story. How did you become who you are today?
Well, believe it or not, I have to thank Leroy McLemore and Norma Jean McLemore, my parents, because without them, there would be no Kevin. But we all go through different things in our lives that defined us, either where we are or where we're headed or where we want to be. And my life was defined early on. I was in the third grade and got up one morning on my way to school, had breakfast with my family, came back that afternoon, and my life changed. My mother and father had decided to separate. My mother relocated to Beverly Hills 90120. From Dayton, Ohio to California. My father had custody of my brothers and sisters and I. He systematically created a different relationship with his life outside of work. And I ended up being raised by my parents. And early on, I had to make decisions on how I wanted my life to be long before I had a life of my own. And I said, as soon as I gained control of what my life was going to be, I was going to make my life exactly what it is today. And I always talk about the power of your words. We speak things in existence. I believe every single one of us, we all have original stories, but our stories are not original. We have all gone through some stuff and we've all made decisions or choices that either put us where we are right now or put us in a situation that we need to make some changes in our life. And fortunately for me, Coach Russo, my freshman high school coach, painted a picture for me that was in full living color, 1080 DP, and allowed me to have life through sports, to have a life that I have now. And now that I understand the power of my words and the message that I have, I spend my life to every single day connecting good people with other good people, and somehow I seem to make dreams come true. So that's my story.
Well, we have a lot in common. I didn't grow up playing high school football, but I played tennis and I learned a lot of discipline through that sport. We're both from Ohio. As I told you, I recently moved back from LA, not quite 90210, but the west side of LA back to Ohio. And I have been enjoying your book about everything that I learned in life. I learned through high school football. Give the audience the exact title because you guys will love this book. What is it called?
It's called The Indispensable Games of X's and O's, How I Learned Everything About Life I Learned Playing High School Football. And basically, I always tell people that if you take the foundations of sports and apply it to your life will be that much better. So when I talk about owning your own story, is that many of us walk around through life with a giant pity party that no one wants to attend. And that's our story. We all have gone through some stuff. We've all been disappointed by friends, family, had our hearts broken or whatever, felt at times that we've been abandoned and ignored. And that's all well and good. But when you have control over your own life, you have to make some decisions that are different from the decisions and the choices you had available to you when life happened to you. And playing high school sports was the best thing. I ended up, if you read the beginning of my book, I actually started playing football on a lie. I told my father I was playing when I wasn't actually on the team. And the only reason I said that I was going to go out for football because when Coach Russo, Joe Russo, which is the guy that saved my life, announced that, you know, how many young men in the gym class was going to go out for freshman football, every young man raised his hand. And there was a beautiful young lady by the name of Pam Jones. I looked at her. She looked at me. And in my mind, I was thinking, Pam says, well, if you go out for the football team, I'll come and see you play. And, you know, like any other little boy, I raised my hand because I was smitten by a girl. And I survived 2 weeks before my father called me on my lie. My father worked his third shift, and I thought I can get away with this. Did not know that, you know, playing football, you had to get dirty, had dirty clothes, whatever. But unknown to me, my father's best friend, John Williams Sr., his son was the starting center on the football team that I claimed that I was playing on. And he took me to my first football practice. And before my father's Chevy Impala stopped, I was already out running beside the car, running down to Coach Russo. And the first thing I said, Mr. Russo, please do not tell my father a lie to him, because we had a rule in our house. My father hated two things, liars and thieves. And my father would have tore me apart if he had found out I lied. And lucky for Coach Russo, he looked up at my dad. And still to this day, I think Mr. Russo and my father already had known what the story was. And so the first part of my book is about living your own lie until you find your truth. And that's the very first thing that I did. I had to understand my truth and finding out who I was at that time. And everyone always talks about discovering your why. And I will tell anyone, your why is going to be defined on each important hallmark moment of your life until your purpose and your why aligns. And so today, my purpose and my why has aligned, and I'm living my life in abundance. I'm not beautiful yet, and I don't know if I have balance, but I'm having fun doing what I do.
I think you're beautiful. I mean, you were a soap opera star, so you've done the acting thing. You're a music producer, so don't be so humble. But I really liked your book. I liked the message of we can do hard things, and especially the scene where it was so hot that day, and you guys had to, as a team in practice, sprint up a hill, and one of the guys quit and walked down the hill, and you were just determined not to quit, even though it was the hardest thing you ever did in your life. You were a small kid, and you had to gain weight and gain muscle and get in shape. So a lot of the people who listen to this are heart-centered entrepreneurs, coaches, creators. What can you, life, can you speak into the power of persistence and perseverance and not quitting?
Well, I will tell anyone that is pursuing a dream, you can either stay shackled to whatever your current situation is, be it your current employer where you're comfortable, you get a paycheck and you're trading dollars for hours. You can either stay shackled to a relationship that's holding you back, that's not when you're not pursuing your dream. And I always tell people, don't ever add anyone to your wagon when they're dragging their own feet on their dream. Consistency is important. When I describe the scene of the young man, when we were running wind sprints and running up the hills, and basically every coach tries to find out what type of athlete you are, what type of man you are. When I watch someone give up on something they really wanted and watch them walk away up the hill, that's you giving up on you. You know, when you talk about failure, there's no such thing as failure. Failure is just life experience. But when you give up on you, that's the only real time you fail. So my advice to any entrepreneur is, remember, it takes 5 years for a bamboo plant to sprout and grow above the ground. That infrastructure underneath is all the time that you're working on trying to get your message right, trying to get your elevator speech right, trying to gain a threshold on your marketing or get viewers, subscribers, whatever. It takes 5 years. Some of us get there sooner, but you'll find out the people that have been fast-tracked, 5 years from now, they'll be starting over again. All right, 5 years. And I just said, be patient. The other thing I would say, surround yourself with like-minded people. Because a lot of times when you see no light in the darkness, they will bring a candle.
Beautiful. I love what your email says, something about your one no away, or talk about your philosophy that you put on your email signature and how important rejection is to make it and be successful.
Well, I wrote that down after someone asked me. When I first started my podcast, I had zero followers.
What is the phrase that you have?
It's the phrase is, you're only as strong as your last no.
Love that. Yeah. Right?
And the reason why I wrote that down, and I write down every time I talk about to someone, whatever pops up in my head, it becomes a quote. And I have over 300 original quotes that we've had cross-reference. And that conversation was basically when someone asked me, how did I get Dave Sanderson to be on my podcast? This is a young man that was responsible for rescuing the people when that plane went down in the East River in New York. They made a movie, Scully, off of it. And I said, simply, I asked. I said, you're only as strong as your last no. All right. So as long as you're getting yes, and someone's going to say no to you, someone's going to break your heart. But you also got to remember that every storm, there's a sunny day coming right behind it. So celebrate the sunshine. That's all I do.
I love that. Well, let's talk about your acronym for HOPE. And that describes your philosophy. What does HOPE stand for in your world?
Well, I'm going to have to peel back another page of my life, eighth grade. Mrs. Nerney, my third grade teacher, asked the class, you know, how do you want to be remembered? And at 8 years old, I said, I just want to make sure that I make a difference in someone's life. I just want to help other people every day. And it took me until I found out what my purpose was, that the acronym for helping other people every day was HOPE. And that's what I created. And that's what I created the foundation of my podcast, is providing opportunities. Still to this day, before when you and I met, there were six people that had been guests on my podcast, that six strangers had granted them their one life wish. Since this past weekend, I now have seven. I have a young man. He is a co-host for Steve Harvey's show. He's living with sickle cell. We are trying to raise money to build a center like St. Jude's in order for sickle cell patients to get the proper medical care. A young man out of Houston, Texas, this weekend donated 35 acres of prime real estate in order for him to build that facility. And so right now we're working on a cruise to raise $5 million in order for him to start that and work on the eradication of sickle cell anemia.
Amazing. So just to reiterate, if you're driving or working out, what does HOPE stand for?
Helping other people every day.
Amazing. We are going to cut to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how Kevin has found so much meaning and purpose in being a master connector. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. We are talking to Kevin McLemore. He's a master connector. He just talked about how six people on the show have said what their wildest dream was, and he's made it come true through his connections and his network. What is it about being a connector that is so exciting, and why is it so important to you to help people manifest their dreams?
I don't know if there's a secret, but I do have what they call, we all have a circle of friends that are in our life. Many times the friends that we have in our life, normally they're there for a reason. And a lot of that reason is what you can do for them. But if you look at your hands, you have five fingers on each hand. The real people that are in your life show up in your life in order to pour into you. They want nothing else other than to see you do well. I happen to be the right hand or left hand to many of the friends that I have. I have a group of friends that when asked, we deliver without any questions. And those are people that we say we ride and die for. That circle of friends keeps expanding every single time we get introduced to another layer. I only surround myself, and you'll hear this quote, surround yourself with high valued people. I only surround myself with people that have a high call to action. We say yes rather than no. The only thing that we have as a rule is that we don't do anything that's going to hurt anybody. And that's how you do it. You surround people, and what happens is good people want to bring other good people within the circle. And when you're doing things to make a difference in life, we're always pouring into someone's cup. We're never releasing the valve out of the bottom and pulling something out. And when your cup is overflowing, the whole purpose of having a saucer is to catch the overflow.
Ooh, I like that quote. Well, I remember being on your show and you said you're going to make my dream come true. And that is to be in a movie. So how's that going?
So far, the introduction has been there. Okay. I have, and I'll say this, Mike Jones is doing a movie called The Gentleman's Club. It's starring a bunch of females that are in power. And the whole purpose is to show women in powerful positions competing in a world that's dominated by men. And I did send your information over to him.
Thank you.
You know, that's a start, getting an introduction from there. So someone does know about you. And I'm calling out Mike Jones in Florida, my friend. When you see this, I'm going to send you this link. I'm going to tell you, call Rebecca Whitman.
Oh, my God. I'm totally not meaning to put you on the spot. I was just kidding. But thank you for sharing.
That's what you're supposed to do. And I would also say George Lee in California. I didn't think about this because he does horror movies. I'll send him your reel also. And he's someone that works with a guy by the name of Brockheimer's.
Yeah.
With the Rock or whatever.
Hey, Brockheimer. Yep.
Yep.
Well, you are truly a gem and you love connecting people. You love sharing life lessons through story. What are some of your secrets or tips to being such a compelling storyteller?
I'm going to say this. This is Dr. Martin Luther King gave a television star this advice. He says, just tell them the truth. Mm-hmm. And when you tell the truth, it's up to the people receiving your message to know if you're a compelling story or not. And I just know there's a beginning, a middle, and I'm living to come to the end. I have not gotten to that. And someone else will tell my story once I get to the end. But right now, I'm on a journey to make a difference in people's lives. I'm not looking for anything to come into my life, but I've been very lucky. I mean, even to have you, who would know that your better half shared a personal friendship with someone that I cared about, Mr. Ray Liotta. It's a small world.
It is. You know?
And the reason why we came together is because God put us together. You know, it just happens to be our season. And people have to realize you have to be patient because your season will come. We live in a life right now that we're all looking for immediate gratification. I've learned through my life experience that God will give you what he wants on his time frame. So I'm truly believe in delayed gratification. The key thing is I wrote a book called The World Is Not Ready For You. I was told throughout my whole career that they had to get the world ready for me. And I didn't know until I wrote that book what exactly that meant. So I am ready at this point for whatever God has is going to bless me with. I am ready to receive it. Because the good thing about having faith is it's like having money. If you don't do good with it, there's no use of having it.
Wow, that is a great analogy. And yes, it is so easy to get impatient. I know I get impatient on my path of manifesting my dreams and I want everything and I want it yesterday. And I compare myself, you know, why are they getting it so fast? And my road is so much longer. What would you tell someone like myself who does get impatient or who compares themselves to others who have had success seemingly faster and easier?
I'm going to say climb a mountain. And the reason why I say climb a mountain, because when you get to the top of any mountain, turn around 360 degrees. Turn around and look around and take in. See what God has created for you. Everything that you see as far as your eyes can see happen over time.
Yeah.
All right. And that changed me. Changed me from social media. Changed me from my relationship with my phone. The first time I climbed a mountain in Lake Placid, New York, it was Phelps. I was the first person up there. And I laid there for about 20 minutes before another human being. And to be that close to what we would consider heaven, and all I can hear is me breathing. And I came back and I said, I'm doing this all wrong. I can care less who followed me. And like I said, you know, when I interviewed you, I only want people that want to follow me or subscribe that want to help someone else. If you're just doing it for a number, I don't care how big the number. I look for quality in people versus quantity. And I would say to anyone else, go to some place that you're totally disconnected from social media and discover who you are and what's really in your heart. When you find out what you desire most in life, there's fewer questions and a lot more answers to what you should be and what you should be doing. We're all chasing someone else's dreams until reality comes in and says, this is what you need to do. And sometimes we end this life living a life that we never lived. And that's not going to be my story.
That's
not going to be your story.
No, it's not. That's so profound. So I heard that from one of my favorite spiritual teachers, Michael Beckwith, that transformation is more of a subtraction, not an addition. And you're saying that basically in your last answer, that life got simpler, answers got clearer. You're not about the likes or the comments. You're just focused on your purpose. Can you speak into that about how your life got simpler? And also a double question, and how did that change the relationship with your phone, life getting simpler?
Well, one, the simple part of life is says, why am I doing everything else that everyone else is doing? Throughout my whole life, I've been creating a space in this world that was special. So me trying to, you know, with my team, get as many likes and many followers and be the number one podcast. And I'm saying, you know something? I can care less about being number two. If I have three people that listen to my podcast, I make a difference in three people's life. I can care less if a million people listen and did nothing with their life.
Mm.
All right. When I talk about simplifying everything, I realized when I read the book Hooked, and I realized there was a system in play that has pre-programmed each and every last one of us in order to be consumers for the rest of our life. Mm-hmm. You look at, go to any gym in the busiest time, and you'll see if there's seven benches in the free weight room, six of them occupied by people that are searching their social media, and only one person is training there. All right? You can't watch an adult walk across the street without looking down at their phone. You have people saying that they would rather die than lose their phone. You think about it. We have all been programmed in order to be consumers. And I always say, if your phone's not making you money, it's costing you money.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I realized, and I said, let me simplify that, it's like, you know, when I talk about the four things that in life that will change your life, and the one is being so disgusted with a part of your life that you don't want to do it anymore. And that could be relationships, jobs, and whatever. The other part is making a decision. You either change your behavior and move on. The other thing is figuring out what you desire most in life and then following that and make no exceptions. And the last part is letting go of whatever is holding you back. It could be a broken heart. It could be a loss of someone. It could be fired from a job. It could be bankrupt and being homeless. All right. Once you've made those decisions and you free yourself of all the things that's holding you back, you have no other opportunity but to live your life, and you live your life on your own terms. I don't care what people think. You know, I let them. You don't have to like me. You don't have to love me. That's your problem. It's not mine. It's not ever going to stop me. All right? Let them. Let them be whatever you are.
So I love these. So these are the four steps to getting everything you want. The first one, I wrote these down. If you're listening, write these down. Being disgusted with where you are.
Well, you have to be at a point in life, you're just not going to live anymore. Live this life anymore. If your job is pressing you and you show up every day for a paycheck, but they treat you wrong and don't respect you, get another job. Okay. And that's where the decisions come in. If you're in a marriage and you think life is not going to be better because you're not the breadwinner or whatever, I can show you a whole list. Go to a library, go to a bookstore. There's a whole list of people that have gone through one relationship and thought it wasn't going to be any better, and all of a sudden their life got better. And then you have to think of what you really and truly desire the most. What is the one thing that you want out of this life that no one can take from you, that you can give? Get it yourself. And the other is let go of the things that are holding you back. If you've lost someone, you know, we understand how that is. I'm going through that, you know, with my mother's is rounding the corner of her life. It's going to be horrible. I love her, but she's 92 years of age. She has showed me a lot. When she told me she had cancer, and I said I wanted to pull out all the stops and help her, she told me I was the most selfish person in the world. She said, I didn't ask for help. She said, this is God's will. This is God's way. So now I learn where I got my attitude from.
Well, how did you get back in touch with your mom? I know it was the most painful day of your life that she walked out and left Ohio, moved to California. How did you reconnect with her?
Well, the key thing is, 35 years of age, I had to own up to what I said, you had to own your own truth. I lived my whole childhood life and some of my adult life lying to the people that were closest to me, because I told everyone my mother was dead. That was my coping skills. Mm-hmm. In order to deal with the fact that I felt abandoned. I did not know that. Did not go to therapy or anything else. But it was a fuel for my fire to say when I had a life of my own, I was going to live my life different. Both my parents weren't exactly the ideal parents, but I loved my parents. Loved them regardless. And I tell anyone, no matter what you've gone through with your parents right now, fix it. Love them before you're standing over that box. And when my father died 15 years ago, I realized that my kids had every right to know their grandmother. I said, whatever I was holding on to, and she didn't even know I felt this way. But when she came back into my life, I had to make a choice. And everyone in life has two things in life that are important, chance and choices. I chose to bring my mother back in my to life, so my children. And I found out that I had the most amazing mother in the world. And my mother had made a choice that was best for her. And I had to respect that. And what is in my book, what I learned, it was a chapter that I wasn't even writing in my book when I outlined the book, is finding grace. And I realized that God forgave someone that put a spear between his rib. Who says I'm greater than anybody else? And now I have one of the most amazing relationships with one of the most intelligent women that I know, my mother. Norma Jean, I love you. And so whatever decisions that she had made back there, I had to resolve. I live in today. My moments matter. All right. So regardless of what experiences my siblings have, this was my experience. And to this day, I get a chance to say, I love my mother. My mother loves me. And my mother has given me great advice.
So how old were you when you reconnected with your mom?
I was 35 years of age. I had already started.
Did she welcome the reconnection, or was she like, I'm good? How did that go on? How did it?
I don't know on her end. And I try to stay away from this topic because I don't want people to realize that my life is drama.
Right.
Because I said, we all have our stories, but I've got a great relationship. I was 35 years of age when she came back in my life. I wasn't ready to have a mom. But when I made the decision that my mother come back in my life, it's fine. I've had many people wanted to talk about the drama and the shortcomings. That's not what my life is about. My life is all about positive conversation, positive interactions. I cannot go back and edit, rewrite anything before decisions that I made. Now that I have power and control of my own life, it's my choices that dictate my happiness.
We are going to cut to a quick commercial break, but you are living the fourth step of how to get whatever you want. You had to let go of the old story that your mom abandoned you, and that letting go gave you the ability to welcome her back into your life. And now up into her, you know, last chapters, you guys have a beautiful relationship. So thank you for sharing that story. We're going to cut to a commercial and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We are here with author, speaker, fitness influencer, Kevin McLemore. You know, I have got to ask you about your fitness and nutrition philosophy, because that's one of the focuses of the show. The show is about the seven pillars of abundance, and the second pillar is fitness. So what is your philosophy when it comes to fitness and nutrition?
Believe it or not, I'm going to say one, nutrition. I'm like a plant. If you don't feed me, I don't grow. If you don't feed me good stuff, I don't become strong. If you don't keep me hydrated, I can't have clear thoughts. And so without nutrition, I can't live. Now, without fitness, okay, that's a shine on every pretty beautiful sports car. You know, all the parts that have to run the way that they were designed. I always tell people in the fitness world, your body was designed to be a Ferrari. Stop treating it like it's a Pinto. Stop putting regular fuel inside of it when it needs high performance octane. Wash your car. Keep the regular maintenance up on it. Give it rest when it needs rest. my fitness is paramount. I broke up with a girl years ago because she distracted me from my workout. And so, because she didn't like the fact that I had a regimen with a group of friends. If your health is not a priority, your health will fail you. And so it's a priority to me. I get up every morning before 4 o'clock and my workout is done because I'm busy during the course of the day and I don't want any distractions. I don't look at my phone. I don't answer emails. It's all about me. When you make a investment, your best investment that you have is your own personal health. Ask yourself, when you're sick, people pay attention to you for about 72 hours and then they go on about your life and then you're on your own. So who are you left to deal with? Just you. Your fitness is the same way. The other thing I will tell people when it comes to fitness, stop chasing your weight. It's your
body. Yes, that's a good one. Especially women, they get more focused on their body weight than body composition.
Well, it's men. Men have adapted that too. And I'm going to say to all your listeners, the reason why all these weight loss programs are come up is because it's profitable. Mm-hmm. There is never going to be a man, and Rebecca, and I'll tell your husband, please don't be offended. There's never going to be a man that's going to come up and say to you, Rebecca Whitman, you have the most amazing hair, your deep brown eyes, you got a smile that will light up a dark room. But before I commit to living the rest of my life with you, do me a favor, step on the scale. All right. The only time your weight means anything is you're bragging about it to someone else that's trying to lose weight. And this is your way of saying, F you, I did it. You can do it too. The other thing is too, you lose weight too fast and you're large, you're going to have saggy skin. So you're going to look worse than what you are. All right. Take care of you. Get stronger. For any woman, especially over 40, lift some weight. Be consistent at it. Keep hydrated. Eat good food. Don't blame everything on hormones. It's an attitude. All right. For those men, quit looking at the guys that are supersized and whatever, because a lot of times they're not natural. All right. That's never going to be you. You're never going to end up in the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, whatever. Look in the mirror and look at you and be the best version, male or female, of you. Just be healthy and fit, because when you're healthy and fit, you have clarity. And quit thinking about what other people think. I can show you 20 people that all weigh 152 pounds. And I'll show you 20 different body types.
Very well said. And as far as nutrition, there's so many different philosophies out there. Intermittent fasting, vegan, paleo, keto, carnivore diet. I know you train a lot of, very affluent people. What is your advice to them as far as their diet?
I'm going to tell you to return back to who you are. Look at a baby. A child needs nutrition every 2.5 hours. Your body needs it. When you go through and you are intermittent fasting, if you're just trying to lose weight and whatever, it's a great idea if you're chasing that number. But I will guarantee you, whatever number you're chasing, once you catch it, it doesn't want to be caught. It won't stay there and it will bring back 5 friends. All right. The other thing is you have to find out within your lifestyle what works for you. Again, all of these things are marketing. If they're attached with a website attached to it and a subscription for you to take this and whatever, it is not natural. Because if I do take supplements, I do have protein powder, whatever, but I eat real food. Mm-hmm. And when I look for my protein, I look and see where the animals get their protein, and farmers are going to hate me when they hear me say that. But if you're looking for protein from a cow, ask yourself, where does the cow get his protein? And then you go there too.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is eat, if you eat protein, make sure you know where it's sourced. And also you're saying eat every 2.5-3 hours and don't skip breakfast. Is that what you're saying?
It is hard for people to follow that unless you create a system. It was difficult for me to do it because I was intermittent fasting because of my work schedule. Mm-hmm. Until I had issues. I had a reaction to the COVID shot, which damaged one of the arteries in my heart. And so I got a bunch of pills to say, do this, raise my blood pressure, lower my blood pressure, my thyroid, and whatever the case may be. And my doctor's going to hear this for the first time. 2 months ago, I got a clear bill of health. So my yearly physical 2 days ago, and he says, continue to do what you're doing because all of your systems are back to normal. Blood pressure, heart, thyroid, all this. He does not know I have not taken any of that medication he gave me. The side effects are so bad and whatever. But I did change the three elements in my life that I had problems with. One, I wasn't staying hydrated because of the demand of my schedule. I was doing 8 to 12 workouts without a break during the course of a day. The other, I was only functioning, and I've been doing this since I was 14, on 3.5 hours of sleep. So now I get 6.5 hours of sleep. The other thing, I had to manage my stress. I was going through something in my personal relationship, and because it wasn't being resolved, I finally woke up one day and said, look, it's not going to kill me. F it. If this is a choice that you're going to make, there are other people in life that would appreciate something like me. So I had to let those things go. I had to practice one of those pillars to resolve those issues. When I give people advice, especially when I'm training them, it's like, let's find out where your secret is to your fitness. And then we'll put an exclamation point on the things that you need. Exercise, like everything else, is trial and error. Some people can't eat every 200 hours, but you can pack lunch. If you own a business, if you want to be productive, every week, bring in a fruit basket, bring in a nut basket or cheese, because people that are hungry don't work well. People that are well-fed and hydrated and whatever, they perform like, you know, world-class athletes. So you think about that. So I won't subscribe to one particular diet other than eat a balanced meal. If you're burning a lot of calories, then you're going to need more calories in, but don't work with a deficit. Most of my clients probably consume between 15 to 2,000 calories more to lose weight because most people are undernourished. Most people eat items. They don't eat food.
Mm. If you eat the right foods, you can eat more. I love that.
Well,
let's switch topics because I know you said a relationship was causing you stress. You've actually written a book called Dating with a Full Deck. So what have you learned about dating in midlife that you discuss in your book?
Well, I am the most unsuccessful dater in my book. And what I realized when I wrote that book, I had to take ownership of why my first marriage failed. Mm-hmm. Instead of blaming her and whatever, I had to look at where I fell short. And I dedicated the book to my ex-wife. And I basically said, if I had learned what I have written in the book, I would probably still be married. If she was also open to learning that. And relationships take work. You know, we live in a convenient society. It's too easy to get married. It's too easy to get out of marriage. Our parents and whatever, they work through all the stuff that we call deal breakers. And I will tell you, deal breakers, unless you're in a physically abusive relationship, mentally abusive relationship, relationship takes work. When you marry a person and you're true to your faith, you work through some stuff. The two examples of people that were most successful that I know, that when I was asked who were successful, had successful marriages, they had lived through infidelity, financial, some verbal and mental abuse, whatever, and they had a happy life. When my grandmother had issues with my father, the one thing she said, why am I going to give him up to someone else when I did all the work to make him right?
Good point. She trained him, as I would say.
Yeah, so my book, Dating with the Full Deck, is not about finding Mr. or Mrs. Right or the right one for right now. It's all about my shortcomings and not having a lot of game because I'm awkward when I like someone. I'm cool as a cucumber when I'm just talking, but when I'm interested, I stutter. I can't get my words together. I say stupid stuff. And I wanted to write something for that one person that says, give me a chance not to screw up the opportunity to have a second date. That's all the book's about. It talks about human behavior, which I study. It talks about the interaction between understanding men and women and our emotions. And it talks about being true to yourself. And in the back of the book, there's cards in it you cut out on your first date. And every single thing that you're going to learn about a person in 6 months and discover if you want to be with them, you're going to learn within an hour and a half on the perfect date. Every conversation. So there's no awkward conversation. There's questions in there to be asked and answered. And if you're honest with yourself and honest with the person, it's nothing but laughter and you want to see that person again. That's all the book's designed to. There's two joker cards in there. So it's a conversation like the one we had about my parents. I kind of skipped over it because it was uncomfortable. It's a trigger for me that we agree after reading the book that we're going to have that conversation. So the whole setup, if I would to ask you out on a date, I'm using this hypothetically, Ben, please forgive me. I would bring two books to the date. I would buy one for myself. I would hand you the book. And if you were a man, I can almost guarantee you that most men don't read. But because you're so beautiful and wonderful, the night before the date, I'm going to read the beginning of the book, at least two chapters, and the end of the book. And I've written the end of the book so compelling that you'll have to go back and say, let me read a couple more chapters. And you'll come back and you realize what the book is all about. It's being honest right out the front. Because we're all either in a relationship or too much of a coward to get out of. All right. We're all too damaged from past relationships. We won't give a good thing a chance to be a good thing. Or we're in a situation where we can't get out of our own way. Or we're married to someone and we're in love with someone else. You know, how many times I wrote a song about being in love with your best friend. And you stay in there because you're too afraid to tell your best friend that you love her and this is your soulmate. But you stay in this relationship just because you feel stuck.
Or you can be happily married to your soulmate.
You can be happily married to your soulmate. But how you become happily married is that you take your soulmate as they are and stop trying to make them something that they're not. Because they're going to have their shortcomings. And you got to say, today, let me deal with what I have today and look at tomorrow. Because if you count your blessings, your life is living with abundance. And we keep looking for the next best thing someplace else.
I call that the BBD, bigger, better deal syndrome.
Yep.
So give us, I know I want people to go get the book, but give us a couple of these juicy questions to ask on the first date.
The first thing that I ask as a joke is that would you rather be 400 pounds or $400,000 in debt?
Ooh, that's an easy one for me.
And what would your answer be?
What do you think?
I am not going to. I asked you a question. You're supposed to ask.
I would rather be $400,000 in debt.
Okay, and why is that?
Because debt can actually help you make money. I mean, having a beautiful house that you could owe $400,000 on it, it could be worth more than that either today or in the future. So all sometimes right. It takes money to make money.
And the translation of that in my mindset is telling your partner where your priorities are. If your health is your number one priority and you know, and go from there, you know a person, if they don't take care of themselves, they won't take care of you. Every single person has ever been $400,000 in debt. And I know someone personally, and he died a multi-million dollar after being $400,000 in debt. He was actually $400 million in debt and he ended up thriving. But his family stuck with him. All right. The other is, this is a funny one. If you were in a boat with your favorite pet, could be a dog or a cat, and you were just on a date with this person and the boat capsized, and you were the only one of the three of you that could swim, and you only had one attempt to save one of them, which one would you save, your pet or that male or female in the boat?
Pet.
You would save the pet?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, dogs are my religion. I'm obsessed with my dogs at all times. They're like, they're the glue that holds my fragile psyche together.
Okay. So what that's telling me in translation is that I'm going to be part of your life. I have to accept your pets on the same level that I love you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you're not a dog lover and whatever, there's nothing that I'm going to be able to do to persuade you to keep me around if I hate your dog.
I had a guy that I was dating and he was a great catch. He said he hated the sound of my dog's nails on the hardwood floor because it reminded him of his childhood and he didn't have a good childhood. And that was the end. You know, I'm like, well, if you're with me, you're always going to hear the sound of the pitter patter of dog's feet on a hardwood floor. So it's not going to work out. And I broke up with him.
Yeah. So, and that's what I'm saying. Most people 6 months into the relationship, this is a guy thing. We can only create that persona that we're the perfect guy for you and hold it off for 6 months. After six yeah. months, we leave the toilet seat up. We can't. We forget to put the cap on the thing. We stop calling you. We, you know, at the times of saying how wonderful you are, we forget that. We make plans that we never commit and whatever. And women do the same thing. Walk into some women's house and the house is immaculate. You turn around and open up a closet door, everything that she had. She knows that she's a pig. You know, he knows that he won't clean up the bathroom afterwards. I'll tell you, I'll wash dishes, but I hate washing the toilet. Mm-hmm. I'd rather hire someone to do it. But that gives you an idea of what you can live with, because we all have our shortcomings. And none of us are perfect. If we keep looking for perfections in relationships, I'll keep writing books, because books are romantic books are written for profit. That's the reason why they become bestsellers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I could talk to you all day about all the things, fitness, relationships, success, and I know my listeners are going to want to stay in touch with you. You have so much wisdom to share. How can people find your books? How can they find you online and stay in touch with you?
The books are very easy. They're on Amazon.com. Sprinkles, The True Spirit of Christmas was the first book that I have. It's being actually set up to be a feature film. It's all about kindness. It has nothing to do with Christmas, so I apologize. The second book is Indispensable Games of X's and O's, How I Learned Everything About Life I Learned Playing High School Football. The third book is Dating with a Full Deck. We just talked about that. The last book is talked about balance in life and knowing your own story. It's The World Is Not Ready for You. I wrote that book after losing my baby sister at 42 years of age prematurely 2 years ago. So they're deep books, and I'm working on my fifth book, and it's all about stop selling and just care. And so that's about it. And how to get in touch with me is through www.rmkproductions.org. Just fill out the information from there. I would give you my personal email address, and the only reason I'm not giving that is because I want to get to know you before I give out my personal email address. But, you know, just reach out to me, and you can find all my videos and everything from the two podcasts I have, Motivational Sundays with Kevin and Friends and Talking with Kevin and Son. They're on our YouTube page under RMK Productions and Network on our YouTube or any place else you can get your podcast. And you're on there too. We interviewed you.
Yay. You can hear my podcast interview as well. So everyone, thank you so much for being a part of this community. We're all about achieving success and being high vibe without the burnout and the overwhelm. And my mission is to give you tips, tools, and strategies to do that. And I know Kevin gave you so many today. So be sure to share this with a friend. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone.